Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And good morning. Oh, wow. We're excited because we are actually in our brand new studio.
That's right.
You can't see us quite yet.
A couple more weeks.
You know, yes.
Basically, yeah. And we're actually getting phone calls now to our customer service people wanting to know when we start going live with the videos.
That's good.
We've been talking
about it
off and on. Yeah. Reality, I'm sitting here feeling about half naked this morning because I don't have my headphones on.
You know, and you don't have me sitting across from you.
That's right.
I only have one
lovely lady sitting across from me, and that's Dr. Umat. I don't have Lynette.
That's right. I'm missing Lynette.
I'm here. I'm just about 9-10 feet away.
I know.
That's right.
Behind several screens and microphones.
This will require some getting used to.
We are sitting here surrounded by cameras and monitors and all kinds of fancy stuff.
That's right.
I sometimes think NBC and CBS don't have as many cameras around them as we do right now.
But they also have people crawling around on the floor. They don't have the open, fixing things, taping things, and, you know, bringing water bottles.
Yeah, if you start crawling around the floor, I'm going to ask what you were drinking the night before. But that's a whole different issue.
I had water on the rocks this morning.
You got it. Yeah, at any rate.
Oh, well, so here we are.
Good
morning. Believe it or not, Leading Edge Medicine here. We are audio and soon to be video very, very soon.
That's right.
And we have a phone number for you to call. Same number. You can get through with your questions. And we love it when you call and get through earlier than later because we don't want to miss out on your phone call. So here's the number. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770 with your questions for Dr. Jerry Mixon or Dr. Samira Umat. So give us a call. We would love to put you in that call queue and get right to you. All right, so Dr. Mixon.
Yes.
Yes, I'm going to play with some cameras here. Why don't you give us a medical update? What's going on? What is top of mind for you? I don't know. Maybe it's the Olympics. I'm not sure.
A lot of weird things going on there. I'm watching the Olympics. I bet you're not.
No, I'm not watching the Olympics, except I was impressed with the female foil fencer.
Oh, yeah.
Ancient by fencing. She was 27 years old.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Japanese fencer.
Uh-huh.
And she went from behind 7-1 and then won.
Okay,
so
great.
She not only caught up, she ended up winning the match. My daughter, whenever she's in a long match, that's her pattern. She starts out behind and then she tries to catch up. And I keep telling her, no, get ahead in the beginning. But yeah, so the whole family was watching the films of the fencing meets.
Oh, uh-huh.
Just because our daughter fences.
Yeah, I was watching that and thinking of her. I was like, you know what? Ivory's going to be here in a few years.
And the other thing that is, of course, they did indeed have to put off the swimming and the singing because of the pollution.
I was talking about that last week.
That, you know, asking the swimmers to swim in that open sewer is just not a good idea.
And it takes an Olympics to get them to finally want to take the pollution out of the sink.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, what?
Well, and they're heavily using chlorine and bromine.
Right.
And the swimmers who did finally get in,
right,
you know, said it tasted awful
because
of all the chemicals they're using to kill
sea.
The bacteria.
Yeah.
But at least they have not yet made anybody sick from swimming in the Seine. So I guess that's good Olympic news.
That's right. Yeah.
You kill off half a dozen Olympic swimmers, it's going to give you a really bad reputation.
Indeed.
We are looking at a whole lot of kind of fun stuff in medicine right now. We are still refighting the COVID wars.
Yeah.
In the medical community, trying to figure out who screwed up what and how do we keep it from happening again. And really, for all the arguing, I think the answer is really simple. Don't lie to people. When you don't know, say we don't know. You know, and if you say something wrong, admit it as soon as you know it was wrong, and tell them what you now think is right.
Mm.
It's not that tough, really. I mean, politicians hate to admit they were wrong. For some reason, you know, being wrong, you're going to be accused of lying. And there's a difference in being wrong and lying.
Totally. Yeah.
If you say what you think is true and it turns out not to be, that's not a lie. That's a mistake. Mm. And we human beings make mistakes, including doctors. You know, our doctors... Our MD does not stand for minor or major deity. You know, we are subject to error. We make mistakes. And so we are, as a profession, arguing furiously about who said what, when they said it, what did they know, when did they know it. And it's true, once politics invade science, you get cover-ups.
Mm.
And politics... has no business in science,
mm.
You know, nor does consensus. Just because a whole bunch of fancy university people believe something doesn't make it true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no room for consensus. What's really important in science is the data.
Mm.
Look at the data. Don't try to skew the data to make it match what your opinion is.
Mm-hmm.
Make your opinion match the data.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, guys. And if the data changes, your opinion should change.
Right.
I have said for decades, a scientist should be as willing to change his opinion as he is his underwear. You know, and that's as often as is needed. So,
well, we are talking about scientists here, so there's that.
Well, yeah, and we're talking about politicians.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think Joe Biden knew when his underwear needed changing.
Oh boy, let's not even go there.
But that's a different question. Yeah, reality is, don't lie to people. And when you don't know, say, I don't know, or say, I think this might be true, but I'm not sure, you know. And then when the data makes it clear, admit you've changed your mind.
Mm.
I mean, my God, I've been in medicine 48 years, and I have no idea how many times I've had to change my mind in the last 48 years as the science has made my knowledge outdated.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, and it's still happening.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sometimes as a result of a patient or a listener to this radio show.
Mm.
And with that segue in mind, I'm going to bring up a listener. I have no indication in this email that she's a patient.
Okay.
But she's a listener. And here's the email she sent to our staff. It said, I've heard some recent conversations on Leading Edge Medicine with women regarding incontinence. I wanted to share a little information that I've been given by healthcare providers that I haven't heard Dr. Mixon mention. One person on the show asked about electrical stimulation, and he said he thought it was a possibility. And yes, I think it's a possibility. I don't know enough about it to say yes or no.
Hmm.
There's one type for stress incontinence and another type if the cause has more to do with overactive bladder. Then there are injections, Bulkamid for stress incontinence and Botox for overactive bladder. Specialized physical therapy can also be helpful. I think you brought that up, Samira. So that was something you did bring in. Urogynecologists can provide or refer for these treatments. I also recently heard him talk about the possibility of getting semaglutide compounded, I believe in vials, at a cost of $100 to $200 per month, instead of the over $1,000 cost for the normal prescription. I called Paramount Pharmacy, and they only have it in sublingual form for diabetics, for non-diabetics. Could I find out more about where you get it and... or if Dr. Mixon was talking about using it for diabetics. Okay, let me respond to that. You see, I actually do get to read these things you folks send in.
Yes, you do.
Okay, so I don't always address them on the air, but I thought this one was important.
Mm-hmm.
We are not urologists, nor are we oncologists, hematologists, you know, or any other ologist. We treat the normal but undesired changes of aging. Our specialty is the aging process, okay? We know a fair bit about some of this stuff just because I was a country doctor for the first 20-some years and I treated a lot of things. But I don't have all the answers. Okay. And the reality is, I can't be your primary care physician. I'm the guy on the radio. Can't examine you. Don't see your lab reports. And you're going to ask a lot of questions where the best answer I can give you is to refer you to somebody that knows a lot more about that field than I do.
Mm.
Okay. In this case, it is indeed the urogynecologist.
Right.
So we answer the questions to the best of our current knowledge base. But as we keep reminding folks, we're the folks on the radio. We're not your primary care doctor. We can't take on, you know, your particular problems and treat you.
Right.
We do have that issue in our clinics, by the way, because our patients come to us because we are there to treat their aging problems. And what ends up happening is they then want us to write their blood pressure medicines, their arthritis medicines, and all their other medicines. And we have to say no. We cannot become your primary care doctor. We don't have the time to be your aging physician as well as your primary care doctor or your oncologist. It's just impossible. We spend a full hour just taking care of your aging issues without getting diverted to your primary care stuff. That's why we require all of our patients to have a regular primary care doctor
right.
to take care of their other issues.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I do understand that sometimes it's really hard to get into your primary care doctor, but we can't replace them for you. We just can't.
Yeah.
Not a physical possibility unless we raise our prices a whole lot and give you 2 hours instead of 1 hour at every visit.
Yeah, well, then, you know, we can talk about bringing in other specialists that will focus in on that. That's a whole different
thing. Which is what we're actually looking
yeah.
at.
Yeah.
You know, we are looking at bringing in a pain specialist. We
yeah.
are looking at bringing in a cardiologist. And we are looking at bringing in an oncologist, a cancer doctor.
But not a primary care provider.
But not a primary care provider.
Right.
But, yeah, so.
And even in oncology, they are a little specialized, you know,
right.
not...
And what I'm specifically looking for, I'm looking for an oncologist with a specialty in breast cancer that understands the actual hormone evaluations and impact of testosterone and so on breast cancer. So... Yes, we are looking at bringing in said doctors.
Yeah.
And if you know a oncologist who does a lot of breast cancer that you think might fit into longevity, send them us their name. We'll talk to them. All right. We'd love to have a good cancer doctor on our staff. But that's the best we can do. All right. We have to take a little break. I've yammered on long enough about this on my own. And so we'll take a break and be right back in about... minute or two.
Okay. And Dr. Mixon, you're going to have to be able to say, we're not the doctors, you know, your doctors. We're not even the doctors on the radio. We will be the doctors on YouTube as well. So,
yeah, well,
you're going to have to add to that.
That's a different issue.
a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Very good. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. We've already got callers on the line waiting in the queue, and you can as well. Here is that number to get through, 800-465-8770. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. And Dr. Oh, there she is. She's
right.
dancing. Dr. Umat.
That's right. Yeah, wait a minute. Girls are the sugar and spice. And boys, what were we? Snips and snails and puppy dog tails. That was us. Yes.
All right.
All right. All right.
Are you
okay.
ready for some
I've been
callers?
Called a... Never mind.
Okay, we won't go there.
Never mind is right.
Various sorts of dogs from one sort or another.
All right, well, we've got some callers anxious to talk to you. So let's do this. We're headed to Bothell
right.
first. Lori is on the line. Hi, Lori.
Hello, Lori.
Good morning, everyone.
How can we help you, young lady?
I have a question about my daughter. She had... surgery 2 weeks ago for removal of ovary or not ovaries, cysts on her ovaries, and she has endometriosis.
Okay.
My question to you is, they want to put her on a Norsyndrone 0.35 milligram tablet once daily, but she is also on the progesterone 250 0.1 millimeter bioidentical.
All right.
So what is the difference, and what is your opinion? Should she take this pill that they want her to take, or should she stay with the progesterone bioidentical, and does it do the same thing? And they told me that it is not FDA approved and it's not any good, and we're confused on what to do. And if you know anybody that I could send her to balance her hormones, because she hasn't had her hormones checked in a year and a half, maybe 2 years, because the naturopathic that she goes to doesn't believe in doing it more than two times or once a year.
Ooh, I disagree with her naturopath.
How old is your daughter?
33 next week.
How old?
33 next week.
33. Okay.
Okay.
So
and she didn't have any pain, and how she found this out, she went to have an MRI done, and they found it, and they suggested you need to go see your OBGYN. Uh-huh. And that's how we found it.
Okay. Well, that's kind of surprising if she didn't have pain with endometriosis. Because endometriosis is usually exquisitely painful.
I know.
But, you know, I'm not in a
situation. Is there a silent endometriosis that I'm missing?
I don't know. Every time I diagnosed endometriosis, it was because the women came in with a lot of pain
right.
with menstruation.
Yes.
And it turns out that the endometrial implants out inside the belly were actually bleeding, and she had free blood in her peritoneal cavity, and that is very, very painful.
Ovarian
cysts.
The time of the month.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
When she has her time of the month, does the estrogen that she was on, because she was on a little bioidentical estrogen, and she only took it on days 16 to 28 of her cycle, does it go backwards?
That's a little odd, too.
It is odd, yeah.
Because usually the estrogen, if you're going to be recreating the cycle with exogenous hormones, we'd usually use the estrogen earlier to mid-cycle, and then we'd use the progesterone from mid-cycle until about a week before menstruation.
Yeah.
So that's kind of backwards.
So she doesn't know. Yeah, she doesn't know where to go to, and I was wondering if you had a suggestion on how to get this figured out and how to get her hormones balanced, because she's scared that they're going to grow back and she won't have kids, but our surgeon said, yes, you can have kids.
Although
everything else looks fine.
The Northendrum will prevent her from ovulating. The purpose of the Northendrone, it's a synthetic progesterone analog. It's not really progesterone, but it has a progestinic-like effect. And one of the things it does is to shut down ovulation. It's used as a birth control method on a regular basis too. It's one of the major components in the birth control pills. And by preventing her from ovulating, it decreases the chance that she'll form ovarian cysts. Because usually what happens...
Right, but isn't that bad not to have a period?
Well, depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If you're having somebody who's having a lot of pain with every period, and you are someone who actually has endometriosis, shutting down the periods for a year or so, you know, can actually save you a whole lot of grief and decrease scar formations in your belly. Prevent the risk of bowel adhesions and that sort of thing. So women with severe endometriosis, we shut down their periods on purpose because they're in agony with every period.
No, she's not.
But she had no pain, and she has ovarian cysts. The thing I would wonder about is, instead of, and this is a question, not a firm diagnosis, but I would question perhaps her issue is more polycystic ovarian syndrome as opposed to endometriosis. Polycystic ovarian women tend to be overweight. On your physical exam, they tend to have more of a male hair pattern on their belly and around their pubic region. And they have infertility related to this multiple cysts they form on their ovaries. And they process testosterone differently than most women. They actually have much higher testosterone levels than the average woman. So, you know, to make that diagnosis, we'd need a lot more information than we've got from this phone call. But when I see someone who's getting their ovarian cysts surgically approached, but don't have pain with a period, at least that possibility occurs to me. Golly gee.
So do you have anybody I could send her to help her with this other than just her regular OBGYN to get her hormones balanced?
What has her regular OBGYN said about her problem? Let me bounce
just
that question right back.
Just give her this progesterone pill.
Okay, so it's the north end. That's where the norethindrone is coming from, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh. And she doesn't want to stop the bioidentical hormones because she likes them.
Yeah. Well,
but her naturopathic doctor is not on the right path. He doesn't do what I think that he should do.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he's on the right path. And
no, he's not.
And the when during the month is she taking her progesterone, her bioidentical progesterone?
She takes it on the 16th to the 28th of her cycle when she starts her.
Okay, that makes sense, except that if you want to shut down ovulation, you need to start it earlier.
Okay.
But then her GYN is giving her the prescription progesterone, which is probably doing that, or which is definitely doing
and
that.
She hasn't taken it yet. She hasn't picked it up at the pharmacy yet. She saw all the side effects, and she went, oh, no, there's no way I'm doing this.
Yeah.
So she's just free and easy right now. She doesn't know what to do, and so she wanted me to call you because I had been on your hormone creams in 2012, and they really helped me.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, I don't think you can go to him because I don't think they know much about what you're going through.
Mm. All right. Well, it's kind of interesting you call us about a 33-year-old because we are discussing actually developing a program for younger people. Specifically for people in their 20s, 30s, and early 40s. You know, they would have different problems or emphasis on different problems than our older patients, but we think they've got enough significant issues that they're going to need to be addressed.
Yeah.
So, you know, actually your daughter may be in that group that we're hoping to have a program ready for them in the next 6 months or so.
Okay.
So, but
can she
meantime,
come to you to measure the hormones?
It won't. Unless she becomes a patient, the health analysis visit and the blood draw with that will just be a picture in time, and will not be enough to help us tell you what to do for the future.
Right.
We have to be very careful with her because she's cycling, and so the hormone levels are different at different times of the cycle.
Right.
In the first half of the cycle, which is the follicular phase, the estrogen levels are rising, and they are reaching their peak just before she's ready to ovulate for ovulation. And then after that, estrogen level will decline, and then progesterone level will rise. In case she becomes pregnant, the high progesterone level will protect the pregnancy. And then if she does become pregnant, then both estrogen and progesterone will stay very high, luteal phase onwards, and she won't have a period. But if she doesn't become pregnant, then both progesterone and estrogen will fall off. She will shed the lining of the endometrium, and she'll have a regular period, and then the cycle begins again.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we have on occasion accepted young patients that were the children of our current patients. You know, we'll have one of our regular patients that have been with us a while, and they say, I have a daughter or a niece with such and such a problem, and we agree to consult and see that person at least to get them under control and then pass them off to their outside physician. And like I say, we're currently in process of looking at a program designed specifically for people in your daughter's age group.
Okay.
I don't know that we're quite ready, but
no, and I guess we're not sure here whether she has endometriosis or whether she has PCOS.
Well, that would be the reason we would want to see her, would be then to work that up.
I know.
To send her out for this, the sequential imaging studies.
Mm.
Although her current, her recent surgery is going to throw that totally out of kilter for
a while. Right.
All right. As far as the bioidentical versus, they're giving me a signal saying I better hurry up because we got to take a break. As far as the bioidentical versus the Northendrum, the bioidentical, if the blood levels are in a good range, should do every bit as good a job as the Northendrum. But I don't know what her blood levels are. You know, and I don't know how often they'll be in check. You said once a year, and that's totally inadequate for our purposes.
Because her levels are fluctuating constantly.
Yeah.
Even from cycle to cycle, they're going to fluctuate.
Yeah. So, you know, if we were caring for her, we'd be wanting to check her progesterone levels every cycle, and sometimes twice in a cycle.
So can she come to you to do that, or should I send her somewhere else?
Well, the question, I don't know who to send you to.
Yeah.
On the one hand, we aren't quite ready to handle her ourselves. On the other hand, I don't know who to send you to.
Okay.
Tell you what, give us a few weeks and then send us a note, would you? Let us chat about it off the air and decide if we can make a special exception or not.
Okay. And how do I do that?
Oh, you go to our website to contact us. And send an email and just say you talked to us on the air and we ask to have you send us an email. And the staff will review it and then send it off to Dr. Umatter and myself.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Lori. Hope you answered some of those questions, but wow.
Yeah. This is precisely the sort of thing that makes us want to put in a younger group. Young people are having a lot of problems. They're just different than the older folks.
Yes.
We want to be able to help.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Leading Edge Medicine. If you'd like to get through with your call, 1-800-465-8770. Patrick, we're talking with you next, and we'll be right back. Stay close.
Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue.
Oh, yes. Are you crazy for feeling so blue?
I've been crazy for decades.
Yeah. I don't think you ever feel blue. I don't think I've seen you do
blue
that.
Is not one of my normal moods. No.
No, no.
When really bad stuff happens, I am blue for a day, 36 hours, then I become optimistic again. It's just the way it goes.
All right. Well, we're back. Leading Edge Medicine. The phone number to call to get through, 1-800-465-8770. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio and Dr. Samira Umat here behind the scenes. We're actually playing with all of our cameras. Our engineers here. Producer Mark is here as well as me. So we have a full house, which is kind of exciting here as we get ready to be video and audio. Right, Dr. Mixon?
Yep. And for those of you who keep questioning when do we start audio or video, because that's been a question. This week, obviously, we're audio. Next week, we're audio for sure. Probably the third week will be audio. Probably. And then after that, we hope, the fourth week will be live video.
Ta-da!
Wow.
We'll see. That's a hope, not a promise.
Okay. All right. So we can still wear ponytails and sweats in. You know,
ponytails, gym sweats.
I haven't seen you in ponytail? That's ever, Lynette. What are you talking about, girl? You always look so smart.
And look who's talking. Look who's talking. All right. Well, speaking of smart, both of you, we've got another caller on the line. And here's that number to get into the queue, 800-465-8770. Sunny, we lost you. Feel free. Call back. You'll be our next caller. But right now, headed to beautiful Kameno Island. Patrick is on the line. Hi there, Patrick.
Hello, Patrick.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
To start out with, we are, my wife and I are both patients of Dr. Cho.
Uh-huh. And well, congratulations. And would you then help me convince her not to retire?
Well, that's what we're trying to do, yeah.
Yes. I would like to keep her another 10 years, and she's been threatening to retire for the last five years.
I know that. We've been worried about she's going to go, too. But yep. Anyway, I went in EI infection, and I was in the hospital. They said I had heart fibrillation.
Uh-huh.
They took me down and did some tests, and it was two different times in the hospital, and both times different doctors came up and said it wasn't anything to be concerned about.
Okay.
So then I went to my primary doctor. He said he thought I should see a cardiologist.
Yep, you should.
So I went to see a cardiologist. This was about 2 months ago or 2.5 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And he put a heart monitor on me for 24 hours.
Good.
And he wanted to put me on a blood thinner. I've never been on a blood thinner. I'm 88 mm-hmm. and a half years old.
Okay.
And so I didn't go on it, and I wanted to get more information. They want to put a watchman in.
Uh-huh.
And information. I know two people have had it in.
And how have they done?
I just wanted more infection. I understand that you don't have to be on blood thinner with it.
That's right. You don't. That's one of its great joys. Okay, let's talk a little bit about atrial fibrillation, the risk of stroke, the watchman versus anticoagulation. Okay.
They told me my risk of stroke was 2% in a given year.
2% per year. That's right. And it's additive. So 2% the first year, 2% the second year, 2% the third year, etc. So it adds up over time. It means if you live another 10 years, you got a 20% chance of stroking. So
it adds up per year. Okay.
Yeah.
Is he symptomatic with the AFib?
I don't know.
Yeah.
He hasn't said.
Okay.
When you get your atrial fibrillation, do you get symptoms? Do you get lightheaded? Do you get weak? Do you get tired? Are you aware of a regular heartbeat? What happens when you are in it?
Sometimes in the morning I'm a little lightheaded. And I don't feel it very often. Once in a while I can feel a little bit.
Okay.
I've always been told since I was in high school that I had a heart murmur.
Oh.
All right. Well, murmur just means that we're hearing noise as the blood goes through a valve.
Okay.
Most of those are what we refer to as innocent murmurs. That is, they're murmurs that do not denote pathology in the valves. But, and if nobody's gotten excited about it, that's probably what you had all these years. Okay, let's talk about atrial fib just a little bit. AFib is a condition in which the two upper chambers of the heart, the atria, that are supposed to contract shortly before the ventricle. The atria receives the blood coming back from your body. The right atria contracts, pumps the blood down into the ventricle, which is a big, big, stronger pumping chamber. The right ventricle pumps the blood out into your lungs, where we get rid of the carbon dioxide and we pick up the oxygen. The blood then goes into the left atria, which then pumps to push the blood down into the left ventricle, which is a great big pumping chamber that then contracts firmly and pumps the blood out under high pressure throughout the whole body, through all your arteries, okay? So that's kind of the sequence. If that there is a kind of a pacemaker at the top of the right atria that is supposed to kind of fire first, cause the atria to contract, load the ventricles, and get them ready to fire. And the ventricle gets its it's a signal to fire from the atria. Okay. So when you get atrial fibrillation, instead of contracting, that little pacemaker in the atria is not working well. And so the atria are just kind of wiggling. And what you get is structures that instead of contracting rhythmically are just wiggling like a bag of worms. They're getting thousands of discordant firing signals all through the atria. And then when that's happening, the ventricles don't know what the heck to do because they're supposed to get their contraction from the atria. The atria said, okay, we've loaded you with blood, now fire. When the atria aren't contracting and they're just wiggling, the ventricles are at a loss. And so they just go their own way. And sometimes some people's ventricles will slow way down and be contracting 30 or 40 times a minute. Those people tend to get lightheaded and dizzy and very tired. Other people's mm-hmm. ventricles take off like a racehorse and they're beating 130, 150 beats a minute. And then you've got this pounding rapid racehorse pulse. And other people, it shifts back and forth. So it's highly variable. The risk is that atria that is not contracting, the blood tends to get stagnant around the walls of the atria. And by getting stagnant and not moving and flowing, it sets itself up to form clots. And you can form mm-hmm. what we call a mural thrombus. You get this great big clot that covers much of the wall of the atrium. Then, if you go back into sinus rhythm for a minute or two, and you get out of atrial fibrillation, when the atria now contracts, it can break off that great big clot, pump it out either to your lungs to give you pulmonary embolism, or out into your systemic circulation. You can have a stroke, or you can lose circulation to a hand or a foot or a leg. These can be disasters. That's the reason for the anticoagulant, to prevent you from forming the clot. Okay, so that if you do go from atrial fibrillation back into normal rhythm, you're not in danger, or at least you're in less danger. The anticoagulants don't always prevent you from forming that clot, but they do most of the time. The problem with the anticoagulation is it raises your risk of bleeding because now you don't clot as quickly as you should. You can bleed into your kidney. You can bleed into your eyes. You can bleed into your brain. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens. And the newer anticoagulants actually only have about one-fourth as many bleeds as the older warfarin, sodium warfarin, used to.
Right. And with the newer ones, you don't need as many blood tests as you did with warfarin.
Yeah, you're not checking your clotting time
all
every
time.
Month
mm-hmm.
or so.
Right, right. Yeah.
So
that's got, if you're on a blood thinner.
Correct.
Right. So, yes, because the blood thinners then have that advantage. They prevent your risk of a thrombus. Mm-hmm. But they also can cause bleeding problems once in a while.
Yeah.
So now they have this device called the Watchman. And the Watchman mm-hmm. is a device that gets put into the left atrial appendage, which is where the clots usually form. And the Watchman basically is a spacer. It plugs up that left atrial appendage so that you don't have blood getting stagnant in there because you can't get blood into it.
That's right.
And so you're still in atrial fibrillation, but your risk of clotting has gone way, way down, at least as well as the anticoagulants would do, but you don't have to take an anticoagulant and there's no risk of bleeding.
Yeah.
So the Watchman is quite a remarkable improvement in atrial fibrillation therapy. Does that answer your question so far?
And it's not a difficult procedure in the right hands.
Right.
The surgical problems are minimal with it.
Yeah, in the hands of an experienced invasive cardiologist, it's pretty much of a nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the good hands of a good doctor. He's done many of them.
Good,
and
good.
He's one of the pioneers of this, from what I understand.
All right, yeah.
And I'm just wondering if I wanted more information to see if it I should have it put in or not, you know.
Well,
if I ever
develop atrial fibrillation, Watchman is high on my list of possibilities.
What was that again?
I said, if I ever develop atrial fibrillation, the Watchman is high on my list of things that I would seriously consider.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, that's what I wanted to know. It was at the door.
All right.
Anyway, that answers a lot of my questions, I guess, you know. So what are the downsides to it, a Watchman?
Oh, maybe we should talk about that after the break. Yep. Dr. Mixon?
Yep. She's signaled we got to take a break. I've been too wordy, and so we're going slow here. So,
that's okay.
I'll get back to you right after this break, okay?
Yep. Patrick, you hang on the line. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. And our call lines are open for you to get in with your questions at 800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. With more Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. Good morning. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Answering your questions, talking about your health as we age, some of those things that are happening to us that we're not familiar with, talking about what your doctor said you had but didn't really explain it. We talk about your symptoms, basically aging, because we're all aging, right? Dr. Mixon, you're talking with Patrick from Camino Island. And Patrick, you wanted to know some of the downsides of the Watchman?
Yeah, the risks. And basically the risks are the standard risks of surgery. You know, the Watchman is put in through a very small incision, usually in an artery. And, you know, we're talking about a bleeding risk primarily. So bleeding, bruising sort of thing. And then any time we break the integrity of the skin and go into the system, especially into something like the heart, there is a small risk of infection. And an infection in the heart or a systemic infection can be a very, very serious issue. Okay. The good news is this is not the 1920s. We have very, very good infection control in these cardiology operating suites. And so the risk of infection is really tiny. So, yes, there are risks. You know, nothing done to or by human beings is perfect. But this is a very low-risk procedure. So,
okay, well, that's what I was wanting to know. They have
You're in a lot more danger from your atrial fib than you are from putting the Watchman in, I promise you.
Okay. They have me on
Metoprolol. Yeah.
Metoprolol. Yeah. It's a half a tablet a day.
Yeah, okay. Low dose.
Should I stay on that?
Until your cardiologist tells you to not be on it, yes. That's to slow down your heart rate, lower your blood pressure a little bit. Most people on that low dose do very well. The actual biggest complication of that drug is emotional because it damps everything down, including brain function, fatigue and depression. Are the two biggest complications of metoprolol, but the low dose you're on, it's not likely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this was very helpful.
All right. Well,
thank you very much.
That is our goal. We want to help. thank you for the call, sir. Appreciate it.
And good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right. Enjoy your day on Camino, Patrick. Wow, what a beautiful place to be on a day like this. All right, we're going to head to Redmond. We have Bill on the line. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, Bill. Oh, boy, you've got a lot of noise in your background there. Are you driving?
Or walking in the wind? Bill?
Bill? Oh, Bill, we can't hear you.
We can't hear a single
word. If you could grab a spot and call us back.
Yeah, call us. Find a quiet place.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. Now we can. Yes, but there's a lot of background noise. So,
what's going on, sir?
Yeah. Okay. You threw me because you said Redmond instead of Renton.
Okay. But anyway, I'm calling about factor five. Since we're talking about blood and so forth, that how prevalent that is that with possibility of AFib and things like that? What are the dangers of that?
You mean going into atrial fibrillation in a person that has a factor five deficiency? Is that what you're worried about?
Not a factor five deficiency, having too much.
Okay. All right. But, you know, this is a mutation of one of the clotting factors. And that particular factor five mutation increases your risk of having blood clots. And usually in your legs or with pulmonary embolism, so you can end up hitting your lungs. If you had a factor five plus you had atrial fibrillation, now you've got two factors to set you up for clots, which then could result in strokes and pulmonary embolism. That would worry me a lot. So, you know, if I had a factor five patient who also had atrial fibrillation, I'd have them off to a hematologist so fast it'd make your head spin. I'd want the hematologist and the cardiologist looking at them.
In fact, it is possible, Jerry, that the factor five increases risk for AFib. That mutation specifically increases the risk.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
That's what I was thinking. My friend does not have a whole lot of, you know, very active and so forth, but always in mind, I'm always thinking that it's a problem that she's got to look into.
Yeah.
And so what can be done other than, you know, obviously the hematologist and so forth. Is there anything natural that can be done or things that we could?
I'm not aware of, you know, this is the sort of thing I've never treated in my life. So I would have to kick you off to the hematologist for this. It's, you know, Dr. Mixon does not know everything. I'm pretty good with the aging process, but not mutations in the clotting cascade.
Right. You know, and some physicians may talk about natokinase, Jerry, but I'm not confident that that is the right way to go. I would suggest
I wouldn't think it's strong enough.
It isn't. And so I would feel more comfortable if a cardiologist is taking care of you and you're on the right appropriate treatment.
Yeah. So
right now it's just baby aspirin.
All right.
Okay. Well,
so
that's the way it is.
Okay. Have they looked at your genetic profile? I mean, did you inherit it from one or both parents?
One parent.
Okay. So that puts you at lower risk. You know, the risk profile increases dramatically if you inherited this from both parents. But still, it's not something that I would want to tackle on my own. I would want the hematologist and the cardiologist involved.
Absolutely, yeah. How old are you, sir?
I'm 50.
Okay. So, yeah, and as you get older, yeah.
So the last thing we want is to have a guy in his 50s stroke out on us.
That's right.
That would be a disaster, or a pulmonary embolism.
Right.
Just topple over dead one afternoon. So, yeah.
So the idea was that AFib, this could be a factor to future AFibs.
Absolutely.
That's a good possibility.
Yeah, if you are in atrial fibrillation and you're a factor five, I definitely want you, you know, out of my practice as quickly as I could move you. Because, you know, I practiced medicine for 48 years and I have yet to have a malpractice suit.
Hmm.
And I've avoided that. It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I'm smart enough whenever I get someone like the person you're describing out to other people to take care of.
we are trained to recognize emergencies quickly.
That's right. And then get them out of our practice. All right. Well, good luck, sir.
Wonderful for me. So thank you very much for all that.
All right. Thank you, sir. I greatly appreciate your care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Good luck to you. Please take care of yourself. Don't ignore this, okay?
No, we're not. All right. Okay. Take care. All thank
right.
you.
Bye-bye, sir.
All right. Thank you for the call, Bill. And when you do call in, just keep in mind we want you to have your radios turned off or down, or maybe go into another room if you are at home or if you're walking or running. And we love that. We love it when you do because that's so important for you. Maybe take a quick break and make that phone call so we don't hear all the wind in the background.
Yeah, certainly get out of the wind.
Yes, yes. We're about 3 minutes away from a break, and I'm thinking that Dr. Samira, we could talk about longevity because so many people are saying, is this something that I come in to longevity for? Can you do this? Can you do that? Why don't we talk about that for just a bit? Because we still have our health analysis going on.
Yeah, and I like the way that you put it to me, Lynette, and I can't see your eyes. I would have glared at you.
Well,
yes,
you just see her on the monitor.
For me, the thing is, why wouldn't you, right? And sometimes people wonder what age, and we've been talking about that a little bit today, at what age should you start a program like ours? And I think we know enough to now know that the sooner you start it, the better off you will be. Mm-hmm. We've been saying that in the past as well, and we recognize that sometimes it's financially difficult to do that and make a commitment to your health when you're so young and you think everything is going great and you're healthy. But the point is that that's when things start to go wrong. And if you can educate, train, treat, and prevent the progression of disease at that time, then you're ahead of the game. So you are then going to have a better 30s, 40s, and onwards, rather than allow yourself to continue to decline during the golden years, which are the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and then ask somebody to try to help you get on the upswing again. So it's just a shift in the mentality, I think. And the biggest thing is to try to be proactive and to do it sooner rather than wait for it to go downhill first and then get some help to sustain, maintain, and improve at that time.
Yeah. You know, I did a simple calculation recently, again, looking at the cost of nursing homes versus the cost at Longevity Medical Clinic. And it's fascinating. At the current cost of a nursing home,
yeah,
if we can keep you out of the nursing home for 1 year, that is, just delay your having to go to a nursing home by 1 year, it'll pay for 25 years at Longevity Medical Clinic. Wow.
Yeah, you know, that's fascinating, Jerry, but my question is, who wants to go to a nursing home?
Nobody.
Nobody, yeah.
But most Americans end up there.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And if we can avoid 5 or 10 or 15, if we can give you an extra 10 or 15 years of good health.
Right.
Okay. You have saved, by coming to Longevity Medical Clinic, well over $1 million.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's a matter of being wise versus short-term prudent.
Yeah.
So, yes, we are not free, but the benefits of being here long-term dramatically outweigh the downside of not being here until you're already in trouble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we can prevent damage far more efficiently than we can fix it.
That's right. You know, when high blood pressure strikes and the blood vessels are becoming stiff, that is progressive. Once you have it, it's very difficult to go backwards. But when we know you're at risk, we can help manage it earlier. We can help reduce that plaque from building up, because it is building up whether you like it or not, just because you've been on the planet another day. And so what you do about it is really important. And the point is that you can do something.
And we don't want to wait until your vessels are so narrow that you're having pre-stroke symptoms. You're lightheaded and dizzy, or, you know, you're getting your chest pain.
Yeah.
That's normally when people start paying attention to it. But if we can intervene when you're younger and protect that endothelial function, you'll never get the heart attacks. You'll never get the strokes. And you'll do better for an extra 10 or 15 or 20 years. And that's what we're shooting for.
That's right.
Absolutely. We want you to come into Longevity. We do a couple of tests. You get to see our beautiful facility, and you can talk with our doctors. They'll tell you what you're at risk for. We offer an A1C and an in-body test at no charge. Then, if you choose to do the full panel, that's like $2,500 in lab work. We have our own labs at Longevity. And this is why. It costs just under $600 to find out what's going on in your body, your hormones. See if you're at risk for diabetes, for cancers, for heart disease, joint problems, and so much more.
Don't forget dementia.
Oh, yes. I forgot. Wait a minute.
That's a problem.
Okay. Yes. Find out what you're at risk for, and let's do something about it so you can move forward, and you can be what, Dr. Mixon?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and, of course,
happier. Yes, I will give you those numbers in just a moment and also the website. So grab your pencil and your paper so that you will know where to go and find out more about us. We'll be right back. We're taking a quick break. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.